Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys, with your host, Adam Emmert.
Is he half, like, cowboy, half Japanese? Nope. Like, who is this guy?
And Jared Tim.
Could you imagine John Elway riding Thunder? I love Thunder.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys, your Seahawks and Broncos podcast with a West Coast bias. Coming at you today from a beautiful fall day here in Missoula, Montana. One of those absolutely perfect days. Couldn't have been better. I'm your co-host, Seahawks fan, Adam Emmert. Man across the table from me. He could be passed off as Bob the Builder with all of his construction projects lately. Broncos fan, Jared Tim. How are you today, man?
I'm good. I actually didn't even know you were going to start right there on the spot. So I was like, oh, we're going. I'm ready. I'm ready for this. I'm ready. I'm full throttle.
You said you were ready right before I hit record, so I figured you were then ready. Since
the first time you've ever taken me seriously.
I assume you communicate like a dude and you say what you mean.
Well, I did, and now I'm ready. Okay. Here we go.
Well, we got a lot to talk about today. You know, the Seahawks dramatic win, the Broncos spank down that occurred there in Mile High.
Yep.
Today we are also reviewing the, what is this called? Oh, yes.
The Witch Hunt.
The Witch Hunt Spiced Harvest Ale from Bridgeport Brewery. It is an interesting beer. We'll tell you more about it later.
Yep.
And
it's interesting.
So, yeah. So we'll indeed, it is interesting.
We'll leave you with that cliffhanger.
Yeah, exactly. So stay tuned for that coming up here, folks. And then, as always, at the end of the podcast, we'll get into the NFL segment, yeah. Talk about the whole league.
Yeah, I'm pretty interested in this. There's a lot of teams on the rise. I think a lot of teams on the decline, too. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things that are actually starting to play out. I know it's only week four, so you know there's not a ton of storylines going on, but they're all starting to kind of take shape.
Well, it's the quarter pole of the season.
Yeah, so things are starting to take shape, and I think we're going to realize what teams are going to emerge and what teams are going to play for the first pick in the draft.
That's exactly right. I think we got a pretty good sense of that at this point. One other thing I wanted to bring up, folks, is you can always email the show at afodpodcast@gmail.com or get on Facebook and like us there. You can submit your picks every week there and compete with me and Jared as well as the other listeners. We have a bunch of folks doing that, and it's coming out great. We enjoy having all of you guys on there.
Unfortunately, because of that, I have to listen to Jim Rome.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Which I didn't even have time to do that today, so I'm going to have to pack a lot of Jim Rome in one of these days this week, and that's just going to be fucking miserable.
Yeah, our friend Brandon bet that if he beat you in the picks this next week that you'd have to listen to a week of Rome, and I'm sorry.
You know what? We have to go to Idaho tomorrow to work in a lumber mill. I might just put those on while we go over there, so you have
fair.
To do it too.
That's fair, because he beat me too.
Okay.
You know who beat both of us too, Jared? My 10-year-old daughter.
Oh,
like, she beat us in
fuck.
The picks too.
That's terrible.
But she did not come in first, but we'll leave you
I'm
with
so
that
glad I haven't had to see her since then.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that would be terrible. Yeah. I can only take one Emmert.
It's terrible. Other thing that I'd want to invite everybody to do is get on iTunes and rank the show. If you can leave a review and add just your ranking, that actually helps us out a lot. It boosts us up in iTunes, and it's something that people will see more, and it promotes the show. So if you like what we do, or if you hate what we do, get on there and write a review one way or the other.
I would say that's the best thing you can do for us besides interacting. You know, send us an email, give us a call.
Yeah.
Like us on Facebook, get into some of these debates that we've been having.
Definitely. Yeah, it's
they're
good
entertaining.
Stuff. It's good stuff. Yeah, Jared and I, we had a good debate about the best team in the NFL on Facebook. So if you want to see that, check it out on there. My high school friend, Brian Gorton, put in his 2 cents there today.
I liked that.
I bet you did.
I did.
I bet you did. Hey, he's
some
still
people
wrong.
Are sensible, you know?
He's still wrong, but that's fine.
I don't know. I agree with Trent Dilfer. I agree with John Gruden. Mm-hmm. I agree with John Clayton on who the best team in the NFL is. The
that's
Broncos.
Nice. I don't.
Down.
That's fine. Because
no, you're
not.
A denial guy. It's okay.
I'm a facts and stats guy, but you can check those out again on the Facebook page there. You know, I bring him down with facts, reason, and logic, yet somehow hasn't sunk in. But with that said, Jared, let's talk about the Hawks a little bit here. Let's get into some chicken scratch.
If we have to.
You do have to, because that's half of this show, my friend. So
less than.
Big, big game in Houston this last week. A come-from-behind victory that was improbable, to say the least. A real gut-check game. A game that really shows the resiliency of a team. It's one of those games that you can't measure in stats. It's one of, if you look back
on you've been really all about your stats lately, so I'm really surprised to hear that.
Well, hey, there's eyeball test and stats. Those two things, they go together to tell the whole story. In this case, especially with Russell Wilson's performance, the stats don't tell the tale of the tape here. Russell Wilson is Batman. He put on his cape in this game. He put the team on his back and did some Houdini stuff and pulled us out of the fire. It was unbelievable.
It was an impressive comeback game. I do have one question for you, though. Not that I'm starting the shit. I'm not starting shit talk early here, but
really?
I just kind of want your take on what exactly happened, because Yeah, I know you've had the problems with the offensive line, mm-hmm. and when they come up this quick, it's really hard to overcome that.
Right.
But I've heard you say numerous times how bad Houston is. And, you know, I was higher on them before the season started mm-hmm. than you were. And I think you're actually right at this point. I think Schaub is just starting to lose it a little bit.
Yep.
I think their defense is highly overrated, and so is their run game. So given this, why do you think it is, other than just your offensive line, that you guys struggled so early for so long against this team? I know you came back, and that mm-hmm. was resiliency, yeah. like you said. But, you know, what were the keys to why you guys struggled and then why you kind of started to put it together in the end?
Sure. And I think
because your defense tightened up also later on in the game.
Yeah, the defense tightened up after the six-minute mark in the second quarter. And they only allowed two field goals after that. Nothing doing by the Houston Texans for the next three quarters and a half.
Right.
So, you know, you're counting overtime there. So, you know, that's one thing. But as far as what happened, you pointed towards that offensive line, and I think mm-hmm. that's where it starts. How many times I've said on this podcast that you build a team from the inside out, correct?
Right. Absolutely right.
Okay. And this is an exact reason that proves my point. This is an exact example of it. You look at the offensive line, we lost the three starters in 2 weeks. Two of them happened to be our two Pro Bowlers as well, so probably our two best linemen. Now, because of that, that shifted everybody around on the line, plus three people in there except for one person. So four out of our five offensive linemen were either not playing their position or were a backup.
Okay.
And that includes Carpenter, who is starting at left guard. Mm-hmm. He's our backup left guard. He's playing there because McQuiston's now at left tackle. And McQuiston may be one of our starters, but he doesn't start at left tackle. That's not his natural position, and it shows.
Right.
So what I think happens is you see this trickle throughout the team. When the offense can't sustain a drive, and you're going three and out, boom, 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 like we were through that first half, that puts your defense back on the field incredibly quickly, giving their offense just more opportunities to get on a roll. So when you look at it in the first half, Houston had 45 plays compared to Seattle's 15.
You know, I was actually just going to mention that, you know, when you can't sustain a drive because your offensive line, and give some credit to J.J. Watt, too. He's just J.J. Watt. He's fucking good. But, yeah, they killed you guys in total plays, which that's automatically going to lead up to yards. You know, you're just not going to be able to deny that.
That's
a big part of what happened. I saw them just run a lot of plays because you guys just had to keep giving them the ball at that point.
Exactly. And honestly, I thought the run defense was actually pretty darn good, let alone the yardage when you looked at it. You know, they either would bust one for maybe 4 yards or it was nothing. And they bottled that up pretty well. They never had that just jellying right down our throat the entire game.
They did have some good runs, but your defense was on the field a lot in that, especially in that first half. That was when they got the majority of the rushing yards.
Yeah. One thing that really stood out to me in this game is I think that this was just one of those teams that we just don't match up well with, because this is a league of matchups, because of this week. And with the offensive linemen that are down.
You don't want to come into a game with fresh new offensive line injuries when you're going up against J.J. Watt, who can take on three guys.
Well, look, I mean, you got Michael Bowie on, you know, starting at right tackle. He's a seventh-round draft pick, and he's making his first start, and he's lining up across from J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
That's a tall order.
That's bad.
That's a tall order. And then you got guys playing out of position and all that. But, you know, it was a really tough first half. Because of that O-line, just trying to figure it out, just trying to survive. And you saw it trickle down and affect the entire team.
Yep.
And that
does weigh on your defense, too, like we just talked about.
Yeah, another reason that we didn't match up well with this Texans team is Owen Daniels is legit. And
oh, absolutely.
He's a legit tight end, and we can't cover a tight end to save our fucking lives.
So do you guys see this getting better at all? Because, I mean,
tight ends? No.
The one issue that I see with your secondary is it's not Browner, it's not Sherman, it's not Earl Thomas, is that Cam Chancellor, he's never impressed me as far as his coverage goes.
You know, he's
a thumper, and that's good. Mm-hmm. He's great against the run. But, you know, he's always a step behind, it seems like, when he recognizes a route.
I can see why you would think that. In this game, it was actually a little bit different. In fact, when the tight ends were getting open and really carving us up, they were matched up against our linebackers. Well played. And they were matched up against our linebackers and also against Byron Maxwell. We started putting him on Owen Daniels and their backup tight end, Graham, quite a bit. And they got picked on a lot, whether it was Malcolm Smith or Maxwell. When we really turned the tide, if you noticed, is when we put Cam on their tight ends. That started to shut them down. And you notice on the Richard Sherman pick, guess who they were throwing to? They're throwing to Owen Daniels. And we had Sherman on him on that play.
Right. So there's some adjustments made there.
So we made some adjustments. But I think that's going to be an area of the field that we're always going to struggle with. And I don't know if that's a personnel thing or a scheme thing or what. I'm still trying to figure out what that is.
Sometimes there are just mismatches for your defense. And it could be the way you play aggressively, the way you play in man. Because even if you're playing in a man all the time, even if you have an elite secondary, there's going to be an offensive weapon that's going to be a small mismatch, even in the slightest bit. And a decent quarterback, even one like Matt Schaub, can find that almost any time. You know, you're not going to see, you know, Cam Newton expose any of that. Colin Kaepernick probably won't expose any of that kind of shit. You know, Carson Palmer, maybe, maybe not.
Right.
But good, decent quarterbacks, you know, they're going to light you on fire when they see that mismatch. But if you can just limit it to that.
Yeah.
Small price to pay for a win.
Yeah, well, we didn't limit it just to that because Andre Johnson came down with 9 catches for 110 yards.
I think you got to give him a lot of credit. He's playing well.
So here's the thing. You said, you know, I had said that this Texans team was, you know, crap for a while now. Yep. And then you just kind of went through the things that you thought were crappy about him. That's 2-1. That's too many. But with that said, one of the things that really stood out to me is after the game, the way the Seahawks have talked about the Texans, I've never heard him talk about an opponent in this way. It was, this is a really good team. They did a lot of things. They gave the Texans a ton of credit and like really went out there. I think this team is better than I ever estimated that they were. Andre Johnson has more in the tank than I ever thought. So does Arian Foster.
I think they'll both fizzle out after another couple weeks, though.
Oh, I agree. They'll start to wilt. But that front seven for the Houston Texans is a lot better than I had given him credit for. I thought it was just a one-man show, and it more or less is. But
well, he does
that,
and everybody else feeds off of that.
That's exactly,
you know,
that
he put, if he can make a big gap in the offensive line, it just lets everybody else kind of run free.
Still, you know, gets double-teamed and still beats, you know, the other team.
And he's fast, too. He's got some quickness on
him.
Dude,
he's insane.
Size.
He's Frankenstein. He's not a human being. He's not a human being. No. So, you know, the first half, it was just really tough. It was difficult to watch, and as you sat there and watched me, you could see that I was starting to doubt this.
It looked like you guys were in position to lose this game. Although, you know, how much time was left in the fourth quarter? I can't really remember. When you guys were still down, what, 20-3?
20-6, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to look here in my notes real quick, the exact time on that. But yeah,
it's not super important, but
early
time was running
quarter.
Out.
Yeah.
You know, we were both sitting here thinking tick-tock, tick-tock. I mean, if you're going to get something going, now's the time.
Yeah.
And they still didn't.
Exactly. And the defense actually tried to give us a chance in that first half as well. I mean, there was that amazing pick that Earl Thomas made that bounced off like four people, you know, and he goes in there. I mean, that just shows you that guy's the best free safety in the league. There's just nobody else. And it just shows his motor, his hustle, and his instincts to get to that ball. That was really impressive. Malcolm Smith's forced fumble there in the first quarter.
Didn't K.J. Wright recover that just before it was going out of bounds?
Who did recover that? I don't remember. Oh, yeah. Might have been K.J. Yeah. So that was pretty impressive. You know, and then also the thing that, you know, we talk about the O-line, you know, especially in that first half, we didn't do too badly in run blocking. We were abysmal in pass blocking. I mean, every guy was a turnstile.
Yeah, that was tough. And I mean, if your guys don't come back at some point here, and you guys can continue to just let those defensive pass rushers come in free like that, it's going to be a long season.
We're going
to
see Tavares Jackson
grind out some games, but yeah, he's going to get hurt. Man. Yeah, he's going to take some shots.
I think the key to that is getting Unger back more than anybody else. He's our center. He's the guy that makes the line calls. He's our all pro. I think he really protects that left guard and pass protection quite a bit. I think he's really adept at that. He may be back this next week against the Colts. He might not be, but I think his is a shorter-term injury, which is good. Giacomini, he worries me a little less. He had knee surgery this week. They say just a couple weeks. Just a couple weeks, yeah. Right. Apparently he had loose bodies in his knee. So
you know, one of the things that I was talking to you about a couple of days ago was if you have these injuries early on in the season, in a way, it kind of benefits you if your quarterback doesn't get hurt because you're giving all these backups a lot of playing time. So if an injury happens to occur later on in the season or, you know, God forbid, the postseason, you're going to have some experience in there. There's going to be some chemistry that's already been worked on. So I think having these injuries early on in the season is going to benefit you rather than having them later.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I mean, we are getting some experience here. I think a game like this is also really important for a team so that you learn how to win when the situations are difficult. You know, when you feel like, you know, the games are close and you have a team that believes that they're going to pull it out no matter what, these are the types of wins that build that belief, that build that camaraderie. And I think that's a huge thing. you know, those chemistry wins. So, yeah, I mean, there's not a ton to say about the first half other than, God, we freaking sucked. I mean, we couldn't get anything going.
It was pretty bad. I mean, your guys, your offense just couldn't even move the ball at all.
Nope.
You know, Russell Wilson would drop back the pass, immediately have to take off running.
Yeah.
And usually that's when a lot of his magic does happen, but the coverage was good downfield.
It was. And, you know, one thing I noticed there in the first half is he's a little reluctant to really run from the pocket. He was scrambling around to avoid pressure, but to actually get out and scramble for a gain, he was kind of holding the ball, looking for a guy to get open.
Yeah.
And when your eyes are just constantly looking down just to try to avoid, you know, every guy trying to take
your
head off.
You can't see what's coming open down.
Can't make the reads. It messes up everything. So it was tough. But then comes along, you know, the third quarter. And, you know, honestly, it didn't start out that great in the third quarter. I mean, Jesus, first drive, you know, we go sack, false start, a screen pass is short.
Yeah, a screen prance.
And then a scramble. And then we punt, you know, and like, at this
it was looking like more of the same at that point.
It was. And it wasn't until, I mean, when I really had doubts, when I really thought that we weren't going to do this, is when Ben Tate fumbles down about the 20-yard line and we recover the ball. And we have just another horrible sequence where first throw, Russell throws a little bit behind Sidney. I think that shows a little of the chemistry issues that I think they're working out.
Yeah, you were mentioning that the timing was way off between Sidney Rice and
there
Russell
were a couple
Wilson,
throws.
The entire game.
That was one of them where I think Russell thought he was going to settle down there in the zone, and he kept going. And, yeah, you know, Russell threw it to a spot he thought he was going to stay at. Another one on with Sidney was, I can't remember what quarter it was, but, you know, he comes to the top of the route tree, and he goes to the right, and I think Russell was thinking he was going to go to the left.
Oh, yeah.
And
Russell actually, Sidney went away from where that safety was actually going to come across the top.
Yeah.
And Russell kind of threw into it. So
yep.
If Sidney would have caught that football, if he would have actually ran that way, he would have gotten lit up.
Probably.
Time.
Yeah. I mean, so, but yeah, definitely some chemistry issues. The next play on that, we overthrow Sidney going across there. Russell just missed him.
Right in front of the end zone.
He just missed him. Mm-hmm. And then on 3rd and 10, Russell has a crazy scramble out to the left, does one of those. I thought for sure he was going to find somebody, but finds no one, but at least keeps us in field goal range by avoiding a big sack.
Yeah.
Ended up kicking the field goal, and that's when it was 20-6. And that was with about 4:17 left in the third. And that's when I thought we needed a touchdown there.
And then didn't Golden Tate after that, wasn't that when he stepped out of bounds at like the 4-yard line
Fuck.
Or some shit like that?
So,
like,
I was holding off on my special team stocks. I have about 3 special teams things that piss me off in this game, but we can get into them right now.
Well,
you want.
To me, it just seemed like you guys aren't at the peak of your discipline right now. You're not polished.
There were mistakes.
You're not thinking through the entire game yet. You know, that's what I'm seeing. But you guys have a young football team still.
Yeah,
you're not quite as polished as, you know, I think everybody was thinking that this Super Bowl contender would be. I mean, you're still finding a way to win games, which is all that matters at this point.
Yeah.
If you can struggle through some of these mental mistakes and still win games, that's a plus.
Yeah.
You know, I just saw a lot of things that maybe should be cleaned up, and I think special teams like you're going to hit on now is definitely one of them.
Okay, well, let me get into the 3 special teams things that fucking pissed me off. Number one was
Golden
Tate in what you're just talking about there. They punt it down there. It's rolling down the sideline. It's about the 3-yard line, and it's going to go into the end zone. Like, odds are.
Oh, clearly. It was headed that way.
Yeah, and Golden decides for some unknown fucking reason to just pick up the ball and then decides, oh, shit, I can't do anything, and then steps out of bounds.
Well, his momentum took him out of bounds.
Fucking stupid.
So it's just, you gotta have some awareness of where
just
you're at.
Just let the ball go. That's just stupid. Yeah, the other one was in the first
Number
half
two.
With Jeremy Lane takes a punt or a kickoff 9 yards deep in the end zone and brings it the fuck out and ends up fumbling. Thank God we came back up with the ball. But what the hell are you doing, man? Just let it go out. Start on the 20. There's not that big of a difference between starting on the 20 or the 25. Like, just,
you know, I'm seeing a lot of people taking kickoff returns from really deep in their own end zones, and I'm always almost
blah,
wondering
blah, 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 blah.
If coaches are actually telling them to do this just to provide a spark. Sometimes at certain points in the game, you'll take anything. And I think if you're going to land on the 20 with a touchback, I don't think coaches really mind if you start from the 15. Which is where a lot of these are ending up. So they're like, why not? Just return it, see what you can get. Try to get to at least a 20.
I don't know. I mean, I guess. I think there's a few times that you can do that. It's just, at that point in the game, it just didn't feel like it was needed. But the one that bothered me the most, and this actually worked out to be a positive for the team.
Number three
was in overtime. Golden Tate fields a pump at the goal line. A pump at the goal line. And decides to take it back. And ends up at the 31-yard line. Leckler had to make a great tackle just to bring him down. That was a nice tackle by a punter.
That was a pretty good tackle.
But What the fuck are you doing? That's just a dumb football decision.
Especially in overtime.
In overtime, you just don't need it. Let the ball go. Let's start on the 20, live to fight another day. I don't understand it. It pisses me off.
And that's the point where if you guys turn the ball over there, they're just going to win the game.
Yeah.
Game over.
Yeah.
So, that was questionable.
Yeah, God, I was just so frustrated. So that brings me back to where the game finally turned on its head. And that was with the gigantic 99-yard drive, the one time that the team could get something together in this game.
And it came, one of the plays was that miraculous catch by Doug Baldwin.
It was, yeah.
There was a miraculous fourth down run by Russell Wilson.
There were so many magical things. They ended up, after penalties and all the shit that happened on that drive, they ended up having to cover 123 yards to score that touchdown.
Penalties.
I think that's one of the things that shows it was a microcosm of this game. The way that they were able to overcome adversity and all the missteps and just everything that was going against them. You know, you mentioned that third down conversion with Doug Baldwin. That was fucking amazing. I thought for sure when he caught that ball, he was going out of bounds. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, these mental mistakes, they're one of those things that you really hope you improve on throughout the season, because if there's one thing you don't want to have to overcome, it's yourselves.
Well, the big
That's
penalty.
Never what you want to do.
The big penalty on that drive was not a mental mistake.
Well, I'm talking about the rest of the games, you know, the special team stuff. You never want to have to do that throughout the season, especially if you want to be a Super Bowl team.
And I think they've showed improvement about penalties through the course of the season.
That's because Jock Meany's out.
He hasn't been the big
culprit,
though.
He's actually been all right.
The biggest culprit in this game was fucking Kellen Davis when it came to penalties. He played like five plays and he had three goddamn penalties. I'm fucking over it. Get out of here, Kellen Davis.
That was maddening.
I'm done with Browns tight ends, whether it's Evan Moore or Kellen Davis. Fuck off. Stay
your
off
coaching
my team.
Staff's not over him yet.
Well, he better be, because he's absolutely ridiculous. But that drive was crazy. You know, a couple things that really stood out to me was obviously that Baldwin catch, and then Russell Wilson scrambling on that drive. He had that one scramble where he had to like loop around and do like a U-turn in the pocket and then zip out and ended up with 11 yards. Just doing everything in a clutch factor. That's the one thing about Russell's. He's just bathed in clutch every day. He didn't have Wheaties when he woke up that morning for breakfast. He had clutchies for breakfast.
He's just cool, calm, and collected, man. I mean, and if shit's just not working in the passing game, whether it's your chemistry with your receivers or getting flushed out of the pocket, you're going to have to do something. He finally found a way to do that.
Yeah.
And Matt Schaub did he helped you guys. He definitely did a lot of things to help his team lose that game.
Well, he had one throw.
They were burning Matt Schaub jerseys outside the stadium, man.
I'm not sure that's fair, because honestly, the Texans had a lot of chances in this game to win this game, and it's not just all on him. I didn't see him burning Ben Tate jerseys out in the stadium after he fumbled.
I think they're just overshot at this point. They realize his ceiling. They know it. They're not a good playoff team if they do get there.
Yeah.
And, at this point, I think the NFL has just seen Matt Schaub long enough to where they're just not a competitive team anymore.
They're not.
J.J. Watt's a competitive team.
Yeah. Yeah, just him by himself.
But that's it. That's all I see. Ed Reed's old. It's just...
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to talk about was just our running game. I thought it was pretty good. I thought our run blocking was actually pretty decent throughout the game. Marshawn ended up with just a hair under 100 yards, but he had that one run. That was vintage beast mode, man. Just bowling over, guys. It was the sixth guy that finally tackled him. Just
that was pretty impressive. That was fun to watch.
That was fucking awesome. So so I have some optimism, about the run game going forward. As far as pass protection, it can't get worse.
No. And, if your pass protection is struggling this hard, the one thing that you guys are going to need to be able to do against Indianapolis is run the ball, because running the ball, as far as an offensive lineman is concerned, is assignment based.
Yeah.
Pass protection is very different. You just think on the
move,
and it's very quick.
Yeah.
You have to react and make adjustments as you go. Whereas in a run offense, if you're running the ball, you have an assignment. You have a guy. You have a certain job to do. So
yeah.
You got to be able to run the ball this coming week.
Yeah. No, for sure. Another thing, talking about that Sherman pick and how Schaub lost the game. That's one of those things. I think Kubiak put him in a bad spot there, because that's a play that apparently has been on tape for them for a very long time. When Richard Sherman was talking about how he made that pick, apparently that's something they had watched on tape as one of their huge tendencies, is that they run that play action with the naked boot rolling out from that particular formation. And he had knocked one down in practice, and he had picked one off in practice on that same exact play.
Well, that's why you watch tape. You definitely got to learn these teams' tendencies.
The Seahawks' preparation there was fantastic. That was the best defensive play call I've seen them have the entire season. Having Cam come on that blitz, who disguised it really well, too, before he jumped out there. And then Sherman, he made a great pick. And then running it back with just one shoe, because two shoes is too easy. And It was pretty sweet. So, ended up in overtime then at that point, and Your defense just stood up like it had for the whole second half of the game. Offense just got just enough going, you know, with that stupid penalty by Kareem Jackson. That was an idiotic play. I don't know what he was thinking. Suplexes are illegal in the NFL. Last time
I checked. Can't do that.
You know, if he would have picked him up, if he would have just spun him down, you know, when he was still on his feet, that wouldn't have been a flag. But it's the fact that he picked him up.
I actually thought this game was going to end up in a tie.
It was starting to look that way.
I was like, nobody's moving the ball. Nobody really acted like they were going to want to win this game. I mean,
yeah.
I thought it was going to end up in a tie, and then I was going to laugh at you forever.
Yeah.
Because you tied to the Houston Texans.
Except we didn't. We beat them on the road. You know, one of the top defenses in the league, you know, statistically speaking. Eyeball test doesn't back that up. I'd put them about the 10th best defense in the league, maybe.
If that, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I can't think of more than 10 or 9 other defenses that I'd put ahead of them.
I think maybe if you sat down to figure it out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, you know, if I just sat and thought about it. But I don't see a lot of dominant Ds out there for the most part. It's a good quality win when it's all said and done. 10 o'clock start on the road. Largest crowd in that stadium's history. Started out with, you know, just a tough game or, you know, bad half. And to come back and have that resiliency, I think this is a galvanizing win. I think it's going to be big for us going forward.
You know, you just got to hope that your pass protection holds up because Indianapolis is a whole different team at this point.
Well, yeah. And then, you know, speaking of Indianapolis, you know, we got them coming up here next week. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, Jared, if Unger doesn't come back, I'm telling you straight up right now, I'm predicting a loss in this game.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely going with Indianapolis. Indianapolis at home with the way your guys' offensive line and you know your lack of chemistry with receivers right now. I just don't see how your defense can really pull you out another win against a better offense. You know, now that they have Trent Richardson also to complement Andrew Luck, I think at this point, just because of your offensive line, I don't think you guys are a worse team by any means.
No, it's because
just
of
to
the
where
state
you're
of the
at
team.
At this point in the season, I just don't think you guys are as good a team as they are right now because they're not dealing with some of the offensive line injuries. You know, they're actually continuing to grow and to get better. I think Indianapolis has a good chance of being, you know, a good playoff contender down the road once they get better. At this point in the season, I just think on the road, you guys are really going to struggle over there.
I think this just sets up for a loss. You think about it, you know, you just had a big emotional win.
It's a long way to travel.
Yeah, 4 out of your 5 offensive linemen, you know, starting out of position or backups. You've got an Indianapolis team that has a damn good tight end in Colby Fleener. And that's a matchup nightmare at that point. It scares me to death. One thing I didn't realize is Robert Mathis has 7 sacks on this season already.
Yeah, that's one thing that's really got to concern you. Their defense is actually playing a lot better than I would have given them credit for early on.
Their linebacker core doesn't scare me at all, though, and their secondary doesn't scare me at all. It's just a matter of if we can give Russell Wilson enough time to
You're going to have to run the ball, and you're really going to have to rely on some play action in order to...
And I think we can run the ball. I do. And I think that's our only hope is that we can get out there and establish the run early. Because if we don't, and you get
it's
down...
It's over if you don't.
Get down to an Andrew Luck. Russell Wilson can't out-duel Andrew Luck if he has no time.
No. You know, it's not in the air. Andrew Luck, really already in his second season, he's a pretty polished pocket passer. And, you know, he's established that chemistry with Reggie Wayne especially. He's still tearing it up at his age.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a good challenge for you guys as secondary. Andrew Luck is legit. I think he's going to challenge you guys.
I think he is, too. I think that our defense can hold them to, you know, our relative season average at this point, you know, somewhere between the 10 to 20 point range, you know, somewhere in there. I'm going to guess they score about 17. I just don't know if we're going to score too much more than that, considering the offensive line. This is what I would say about my prediction. If Max Unger plays, we win. If Max Unger doesn't play, we don't win.
I would say that 20 to 23 point range for them. And I'm thinking maybe just because your guys' pass protection, like 17. I mean, they're not going to blow you out, but I just, with the way your guys' offensive line looked, man, it's just going to be tough.
It's a tough, tough, tall order coming into Indianapolis. You know, one thing that has stood out, though, is the Seahawks have gotten better on the road. We've won like the last 5 road games or something like that. We played, you know, discounting the Atlanta game, you know, the playoff game. But I think we have a puncher's chance for sure. I mean, it could easily go our way. I think it's going to be a close game. But in the end, every team is going to lose a game at some point during the season. I think this might be one of them. And I don't want to get on this podcast every week and just say, yep, my team's going to win. If it doesn't.
And that's tough to do because you're going to come across those mismatches. You're going to have those games where you have those random turnovers. You can't find rhythm, and then you're just going to lose a game.
You're just going to.
That'll happen.
So a tough game. I'm truly worried about it. We'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see how Andrew Luck faces your secondary. I think he's going to do okay. But yeah, just the mismatch of your offensive line, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. But with that, I think that's everything I had on the Hawks here today.
All right.
Rousing victory this last week, 4-0. It's fantastic. I love being undefeated.
It's better than 3-0.
Through the quarter pole of the, you know, the season here. So up next, folks, we're going to go ahead and review the beer, the Witch Hunt beer from Bridgeport Brewery. So stay tuned for that.
Way to get that out.
Feel pretty proud of that. All right. Stay tuned, folks. All right. Welcome back, folks. Time for the beer review. This
my
is
my second favorite segment of this.
You know, I think I might put it first because when you asked me if I choose Seahawks or beer,
oh, good point.
Overall good point. In life, I chose beer, and I think that was the right choice. Yeah. So
you're probably right.
Today, folks, we are drinking the Witch Hunt Spiced Harvest Ale from Bridgeport. It's a brewery that's based out of Portland, Oregon. Apparently, it's Oregon's oldest craft brewery, so that's kind of interesting there. This beer, it's, you know, they say it's slightly sweet with caramel malts. I would say it's incredibly sweet with the caramel malts. It's a pretty sweet beer.
It's almost like sweet and stout.
Yeah, yeah, that's
it's
true.
Very interesting.
Yeah. They also say it has an intense dry hop character and finished with a hint of cinnamon and nutmeg spices. I think it's more than a hint of cinnamon and nutmeg.
I think it's more than a hint of nutmeg myself. You know, and every fall, I always give the pumpkin beers a shot.
Yeah.
And I love Oktoberfest. Yeah. I would die for an Oktoberfest beer just so the rest of the world could continue to drink it.
Right. No, that's a good martyr to be.
When I keep trying these pumpkin or nutmeg spiced beers, to be completely honest with you, man, I'm disappointed with them.
I hate this beer. I'm not even going to lie.
They're just not that good. But if you like those pumpkin, you know, nutmeg beers, this is a good one. It's very robust.
Sure.
I understand that if this is your flavor of beer, you would love this beer.
Yes.
But it's just, it's not my thing. And I like dark beers.
Yeah.
It's just the nutmeg in the beer really throws it off. It's just, maybe the combination's just a little off.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and here's the thing. Bridgeport makes a lot of great beers.
They do.
This just is not one of them.
Yep. No, and, you know, we didn't always just want to review beers that we like, because I understand that, you know, there are probably a lot of people out there that do like this beer. So we wanted to review it, give our opinion, and, you know, maybe try it and see what you think. If these kinds of fall beers are your thing, this would be a good one for you.
That's true. It's 5.8% by alcohol volume as well, so it's stout.
But if I'm going to drink this beer, I would rather have it be 7.5 so I could drink less of them.
Yes. Oh, for sure, man.
I mean, that's just 12.5.
Look, it's like drinking a piece of pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it feels
but
like.
But not so tasty.
No. No. Oh,
pumpkin pie too heavy on the nutmeg.
Yeah.
And I like the flavor of nutmeg.
Yeah, me too.
drinkability scale.
Yeah. Where do you put this, Jared? I always go first. I'm putting you on the spot here first on your drinkability scale for
chicks,
the Chicas.
I put this at a 2.5.
Really, that low?
This is not going to be one that a girl's going to want to drink, man.
Yeah.
You're like your average girl drinker. We talk about this every time. Your average girl beer drinker, not going to like this beer at all. Take one drink and give it over.
I was going to give it a 4 only because it is less beery tasting than like a beer. You know what I mean? Like it's not a cheerleader beer per se, but it's definitely not. But it definitely isn't like, you know, a regular stout or something like that.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe just that extra sweetness, nutmeginess, like there's a few girls. Because I know this gal, I went to the Phillipsburg Brewery with her, and she drank this raspberry beer that they made there that was absolutely terrible. It was one of the worst beers I've ever had. Their other beers were the bomb. But just because I hate that kind of like uber sweet, you know.
See, I don't think this is too sweet. I think it more sits heavy on the back of my tongue.
Yeah. Here, give me another drink of that.
It's just heavy.
I gotta check this.
To me.
Yeah. Yeah. It, when I say it tastes like drinking a piece of pumpkin pie, that's exactly what it is to me. So, yeah,
and
I don't know.
It's just heavy.
Maybe a 3 or 4.
Yeah.
3. Let's do a 3.
Yeah, so if these kinds of beers aren't your thing, don't try this. But if these are if these types of fall beers other than Oktoberfest are your thing, maybe give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know, although, yo, I went to the Montana Brewers Association Brewfest down at Karis Park this weekend, and it was the bomb again.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God.
I was disappointed. The ex-wife was late picking up the kids, so I didn't get to go. But, cut up with you guys later.
Yeah. And we were shit-faced.
Slaughtered.
But, I mean, I had so many good beers. I had some awesome stouts there. I had this chocolate cream porter.
Yeah.
And, when they say chocolate cream porter, they don't mean like a milk chocolate. They mean like a baker's chocolate. So it's not sweet at all. Yeah, it's just so it's robust kinda, in flavor.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you've had the coffee porters, you know?
Yeah.
Just exchange the coffee for the baker's chocolate.
Oh, it so was, like a bitter chocolate.
Yeah,
okay.
It was so fucking good.
That sounds
but,
tasty.
You know, the,
I like the
Montana
porters.
Breweries, we've said this, you know, so many times during, you know, this beer review segment, how Montana brewers really are almost just ahead of the game at this point. Because it was only Montana brewers. And, you know, to be honest with you, I talked to a lot of people there, and they all say that this is their favorite brew fest of the entire year.
Interesting.
And I, you know, I talked to this one guy. I used to actually see him when I had this other job on a driving route, and I would see him once a week. And we would always talk about beers because he would go to all, he would travel around to all of these ones.
Yeah.
And he was actually originally from the East Coast, and he's lived here for about 20 years. And this guy, he knows his beers very well. I would take his word for anything.
Yeah.
And he said, the Montana Brewers Association Brewfest in Missoula, Montana is the best brewfest he's ever been to by far.
Interesting.
And he's been down to Colorado for theirs. He's been over to Oregon, Washington for all these brewfests. And he said the Montana one is by far the best.
How was the Chica looking there at the...
Always phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, it started out a little sausage heavy.
Oh.
But it evened out. And, you know, maybe that's just because I got a little bit drunker. And so that's all I noticed. That's a strong possibility.
Yeah,
that's a very strong possibility.
Not throwing that
one
out. Yeah.
I mean, my eyes tend to just focus in on one thing after a certain amount of time.
Yeah, women.
And yeah. But the eye candy was good. The beer was good. The friends were good. And you saw the end result of that by 8 o'clock p.m.
Oh, yeah. By the time I met up with you guys, you were pretty drunk. But
oh, boy.
I had a couple beers before I got down there that, you know, just slammed one, you know, had a shower beer, which I don't know. We've talked about the shower beer.
We haven't. I am a firm believer in the shower beer. I have been promoting the shower beer for years.
I thought you were fucking nuts when you told me about the shower beer.
So if you guys don't know what this is, grab a bottle or a can, ice cold beer. It doesn't matter. After a long day, Fridays are the best. I feel like Fridays are the most rewarding shower beer days because your week is over. You've worked your ass off. You're ready to settle into the weekend and not give a rat's ass.
Mm-hmm.
So take an ice cold beer into the shower with you and drink it while you shower a hot shower.
Yeah, I thought you were fucking insane when you told me this because I'm one of those that, like, I don't like baths because it's weird. You're, like, sitting in your own dirt. I don't do, like, a lot of, I don't brush my teeth in the shower. I don't do any extracurriculars in the shower, you know. Like,
just clean and get out.
Just wash down, get out. And okay. I was like, all right, I'll try the shower beer situation. The shower beer is genius.
I think the main thing is that it's your first beer of Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that contrast of hot water and an ice cold beer, so it makes it taste even colder.
Yeah.
You know, I would recommend like a lager, something a little more fizzy to really bite you in the tongue and just, oh man, but
yeah,
shower beer. I have been promoting this for years. I've been doing it for a long time now, especially on a Friday evening, man.
So give it a try, folks. It is worth it. I know it sounds weird, but it is
the shower beer.
It is money.
I would like to give myself a little bit of credit before we move on here, as I did make it till 2 a.m.
You did
Saturday after Brewfest.
You did.
And I stumbled home.
We rallied through pretty good, you know, the two of us. It was fun. We ended up with a fun crew.
A good group of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good time, man. I enjoyed the company all around.
Yeah.
You know, there's no drama. Well, there's no drama in our group usually ever anyway. So, you know, it was awesome. It was a good time.
Good looking girls, fun times.
Yep.
All right, cool. All right, folks, stay tuned. We're coming right back here with some Donkey Spit. Welcome back, folks. Time for some Donkey Spit.
Yeah.
All right, Jared. Broncos, 4-0.
Lay it on you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, it's kind of nice. I mean, if one of our teams was struggling and one was doing well, you and I would just not be friends.
At all. We probably wouldn't talk for like weeks.
Yo, we're struggling right now. You fucker. We're What the hell is that? That's like the extended version of what I did earlier.
Just one big one.
What a dick.
Yep.
You're 2-0, I think.
I am 2-0.
Motherfucker. All right. But, I mean, it's exciting to be 4-0 because you're kind of seeing what your team can do.
Mm-hmm.
And we are winning games. You know, I don't care what the competition is. When you're winning games by an average of 22 points a game, you're just blowing teams out. You know, there's just not a lot of teams who have an answer for what we're doing. And our first four games have gone the same exact way. You know, we'll flirt around with the standard game of football for the first quarter or two. And then after that, it's the Broncos show, offensively and defensive. And the thing that impressed me the most about our defense is, you know, they've been taking a lot of heat from a lot of commentary, you know, especially on ESPN. They've been calling us a pedestrian defense. This was the number two offense in the NFL. This Chip Kelly offense was the number two offense in the NFL. And They scored their first 13 points with, I think there was like, oh, there was 11 minutes and 6 seconds left in the second quarter. They didn't score again until 4 minutes and 35 seconds in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
We held them scoreless for 36 and a half straight minutes.
Sure.
And this was the second offense in the entire league. So I was really impressed by that because our defense over the course of the first four games, you know, you've seen it. You know, when we played Baltimore, it took us a whole half to settle in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the second game took us a little less than that. Third game took us a little less than that. And now we shut them down right after the first quarter. They just didn't have anything. And they ended up getting a touchdown in garbage time. And yep. That was it. And when our offense is scoring five touchdowns a game. Again, last game we scored, you know, two on special teams. And so that's seven touchdowns. You're just giving the ball up to another offense. You're going to give up a lot of yards. But to only give up 20 points, you know, and given the Eagles scoreless drought in that game, I was really impressed by the defense. And this is a defense without Von Miller. And it's also a defense without Champ Bailey. And I know we talked earlier about how Champ Bailey had lost a step.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about putting three corners in the game, when you have DRC, you got Chris Harris and Tony Carter in the game, Champ Bailey is better than Tony Carter. So his presence on the field as far as the chemistry, the leadership, and the communication out there, once he comes back, we will be a better defense. And our pass rush will finally start to light it up again when Von Miller comes back against Indy, you know, on the road.
Well, I would hope that this defense gets a little better because 20 points is the lowest total that you've held an opponent to this point of this season.
That's going
to
happen when your offense is moving up and down the field, scoring touchdowns that quick. When you're given an opposing offense that many chances, they're going to put up points. That there's no way around it. When you're scoring, you know, 42, 45 points a game, that's going to happen.
So does this style of play worry you at all? Because here's the thing. You know, you look at that and you look at the history of the NFL and, you know, the epic offenses that there have been. You know, one that comes to mind out of, you know, off the top of the head is, I believe, is the 98 Vikings. You know, just shattered every single record and mm-hmm. ended up losing, you know, in the playoffs. Big time Patriots offense, you know, from a couple years back, going to the Super Bowl undefeated, get beat by a more traditional team. Also, yep. You know, with the idea that this Super Bowl is going to be played in a colder weather stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got this high-flying offense, and that's great. Well, what happens when you're not able to generate that kind of points and your defense is still giving up, you know, 20-plus a game?
You know, I think if our offense doesn't generate that many – in a cold-weather game, we're going to slow it down a little bit. You know, we showed that last year. And so our defense isn't going to give up that many points, especially when we get Von Miller back. Our defense is only going to get better as the season goes on. And, you know, with these high-powered offenses, like the ones that you had mentioned before, there were also the Saints of 2009 who did win a Super mm-hmm. Bowl. That Patriots team, if you look at that defense compared to ours, they were far worse than our defense is. And I think Peyton Manning at this point in his career, he doesn't have anything to prove to anybody else. He's
no.
got a lot of all-time records. He's known as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Oh, yeah.
What Peyton is out to do right now is prove that after this injury, he can do this for himself. There is no buckle in Peyton Manning's knees this year. You know, there's no quitting him whatsoever. He has
no.
one goal. He's very focused.
I never thought focused. There was in his previous years either. I just think that, you know, the track record as far as, like, him in cold weather games hasn't been good.
It hasn't been too bad. You know, he threw one interception last year against the Baltimore Ravens, and everybody
yeah.
wants to act like he just completely shut down.
Oh, no. That I'm not talking just about that game. I'm talking about the course of his career. You know, a lot of those Patriots games and those
oh,
sort of
that,
things.
Oh, that was fine. I think he's a different player now than he used to be.
Oh, I think he's the same player, just a little smarter.
Which makes him a different player. He sees defenses, so he can read a defense with a snap of a finger.
Sure.
And also, one thing that Peyton Manning has now that he didn't have as much of in the past few years is our run game has really picked it up. You know, we have three really good running backs who have really picked it up. We have, you know, Joel Dreesen is back. Jacob Tammy's back. We have Virgil Green. Julius Thomas is playing out of his mind. And also, he's got Wes Welker, Demaryius Thomas, and Eric Decker.
Yeah.
These are more offensive weapons that he's ever had in his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the Reggie Wayne, Harrison, Dallas Clark days, you know, this receiving core and this running game that he has is even better. So to be completely honest with you, this offensive line is, these guys are the guys who ran with Tim Tebow and they had the number one rushing offense in mm-hmm. the entire NFL. So our ability to run the ball in the cold weather that doesn't worry me one bit. We've so done it in the past, and we can do it again.
Would you like to see this team start to run the ball more throughout the course of the season and maybe throttle back a little bit on this high-flying stuff?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think I told you that in the last game. I was like, I'd run the ball here because I just – and, you know, this is the fan in me. I want to know that we're able to do this because – like you said, I mean, there's no dodging the cold weather games.
No.
You know, when it comes to Super Bowl time or playoff time, whatever it happens to
be. Because you're
going
to have home games.
We're going to have home games, and it can get cold in Denver. Yeah, you can have some really nice winter days, but it can also be shitty. So it depends. You know, that's a matchup thing.
It can be nice and cold, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on who you're going to play at that point. But I think as the year goes on, we're going to start running the ball in situations that we normally wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And I think we started to do that a little bit later in games, too. And come the third quarter and the fourth quarter, we just completely wear teams down.
Yeah.
And so that's when we're really effective with running the ball. And this is the best running team that Peyton Manning has ever had. You know, this is an offensive line and a running scheme that took Tim Tebow to the playoffs. We're the number one rushing offense in the NFL. So I have no doubt that we can run the ball when we need to.
Yeah. Now, one thing that kind of stood out to me about the last few games for you guys is that, you know, you'd mentioned the quality of opponent a little bit, is that, you know, the last four teams that you've played, they have a combined record of 4-12. The only team that you've beat on the road to this point, because you've only had the one road game, to be fair. You know, it's
right.
We got
another one coming up in Dallas.
Right. I mean, it's on your schedule, and, like, what else are you going to do? Like, you go out and you play it. Was the 0-4 Giants. I, in my honest opinion, you know, as far as, I mean, I'm not saying that you're going to lose a ton of games. Like, that's not what I'm saying at all. But I think some of this point margin, this 22 points per game that you're beating people by, I think that's going to start to come back down to earth once you start to play some actual quality opponents and some actual quality defenses. I mean, the defenses of these teams that you, I think the highest one is ranked like 15th in the league. I think that's going to come back down to earth a little bit. But your overall schedule is a pretty easy schedule, though, too. So
now, we'll see. I mean, you know, the schedule ranking and the stats as of week four, I don't really buy too much into that. So what I'm looking at is, you know, as far as what you're saying is the quality of opponents, is when I go back and I watch these games. And when I'm watching the coaches' cam, when you get to see the entire field and what's going on, when we're running these plays, every one of our receivers is running a route like it's the last route he's going to run all season.
Sure.
And so when Peyton Manning picks a player to be open, you're looking around the field and there are numerous guys open because they can't guard anybody. So say we just played, hypothetically, we played a secondary with one elite guy. You know, that guy is still, our receiver is still getting open.
Sure.
However, we still have 3 to 4 other guys who are also getting open. So you add maybe two more elite secondary, you know, corners or safeties, whatever, to that scheme, we're still going to have two guys that are open on every play.
Yeah.
So this beating people by 22 points a game, you know, I think maybe that will come down a little bit.
I think it will.
But even against quality secondaries and defenses, I don't see them stopping us just because of the weapons that we do have. You know, it's going to take a lot.
You're going to score points against any defense. I mean, that's not what I'm trying to get at all.
And I was listening to John Gruden talk about the Broncos, and he talks about this. You know, we have so many formations with the offensive weapons that we have. And I'm actually going to break down one of our bunch formations and the options that we do have out of it. I took a little time to study it and to realize why it was so effective, and I'll get into that. But Gruden said it's just one of the smartest offenses that he's ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point he said it's exhausting to watch because the amount of things that we can do. And, you know, John Fox says we haven't even tapped in fully into our playbook. You know, we got a long ways to go. And so when we start playing more quality opponents, I still don't think these defenses are up to the quality of our offense. And our defense is not as bad as everybody's saying. When we hold the number two scoring offense in the league scoreless for 36 minutes, that's saying something.
Sure.
Our linebackers are great in coverage. Our safeties are killers against the run. I mean, Raheem Moore's playing awesome. I mean, Duke, I don't even have to say anything about him. But, you know, we'll get Champ Bailey back. You know, we got two defensive tackles that are just mountains in the middle of the line. You know, the middle of the field is just not even open to run the ball in. And once we get Von Miller back for the pass rush, that's going to increase our defense that much more. Sean Phillips is playing good. So, you know, does this style of play worry me? Does this scoring 5 touchdowns a game and holding people to 20 points a game worry me? Not in the slightest bit. This is entertaining football. And, you know, I come from watching a John Elway football team win 2 Super Bowls in a row. And this is a better football team top to bottom than I've ever seen.
Sure. Yeah, and that's true. It's just that when I look at it, I just want to see it against some of the better defenses in the league. Like, I just, I haven't, or even on the road against a quality opponent. I mean, for example,
well, and you
the,
will. I can't pick the schedule. No, neither no, no, not Broncos, at all. And you know? Not, so I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
but
I'm not
you know,
like,
we can drag that through the mud if you'd like.
No, not at all. All I'm getting at is, it's not that I don't believe that that you guys aren't going to still be good when you come up against those teams on the road. I just, until I can form a complete opinion, mm-hmm. I need to see it that way. And that's basically all I'm getting at on that. But I just can't, with
how quick Peyton Manning gets rid of the football, nobody's pass rush is going to stifle him whatsoever. You know, he's rarely taken hits in his entire career. He rarely takes a shot. And our running backs are getting better in pass protection. You've seen our offensive line. They stop everything coming towards him.
They're playing well.
You know, nobody even gets 2 yards deep in the backfield at this point. You know, he'll take maybe one or two hits a game. I'm fine with that. That means you guys are doing your job.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean,
and
you're going
to get hit. Julius Thomas has become a complete mismatch for everybody. And so I think, you know, just only offensively speaking, we are a complete mismatch for everyone in the NFL. Just because if a defense has a weakness, we have something to exploit that.
Sure.
There's no doubt about that. And our defense with Von Miller and Champ Bailey is only going to get better. Our communication is only going to get better. One thing I didn't mention that I wanted to was Danny Trevathan actually went down to practice today, Wednesday. You guys will get this tomorrow probably. But, you know, MRI came back negative. He's day-to-day. He might play this weekend. He might not. But okay. So he'll be okay. But our defense is only getting better. We have a younger defense than most people actually think. And our chemistry is building. We're getting our key players back. This is a team that's beating other teams by 22 points a game, and we're only getting better. You know, there's only more upside to this team, which I'm having a hard time believing that, but that's just the way it is. I mean, there are a couple of guys that I respect their NFL opinion big time, and that is John Gruden and Trent Dilfer. And mm-hmm. These are two guys that say they've never seen a football team like this. And so I love hanging my hat on that. That's great to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's nice. It's good. I mean, you're 4-0. That's you can't do any better than that.
You can't get better than that. Oh, and Nate Irving. How often have you seen him just blow up the line and stop a run, man?
He's a hell of a run blocker. I think he's a bit of a liability in coverage, but you guys make up for that in a lot of different ways.
He's not in our coverage, so
yeah.
When we're running a 4-3, that's when he's playing. You know, when we're geared to stop the run, when we're running a nickel, it's going to be
you know,
he won't even be in the game.
No, you hide him well that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. You play to his strengths, and that's
absolutely.
What you're supposed to do, you know.
Yep. And so there's one of the formations that we run that I kind of wanted to break down that no team has been able to actually stop this for 2 years now. Not a single team has been able to stop this. And this is that bunch formation that, you know, I guess the most popular play we'd run out of here is that Demaryius Thomas screen that usually goes for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So
went for one last game.
It did. And you know, we had another 9-yard gain out of it just easily that Peyton Manning had audibled to.
Yeah.
And so we don't even line up to run this screen all the time. And the reason it's so effective, there are a lot of reasons it's effective, because we've done so many things out of it. And over the course of four games, I've seen so many different things out of it. I can't go over them all. There's not enough time.
Right.
But a couple of the reasons it's so effective is that our wide receivers block incredibly well. I think Eric Decker might be one of the best downfield blockers as a wide receiver that I've ever seen. You know, Rod Smith was a really good blocker downfield. So was Ed McCaffrey. But
Hines Ward was awesome.
Hines Ward was really good, too. He'd
yeah.
blow people up.
Yeah.
He would take any shot he could
he's
get.
He's the best blocking receiver I've ever seen. Yeah, right there.
Probably would yeah. be number one.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, I think
but
Decker is a good blocker.
Great. And
yeah.
Wes Welker is a good blocker downfield.
That guy was just, he just was born tough. Like, he popped out of the womb,
Wes
he's just
Welker
like,
is tough. And his advantage is that he's so much shorter than everybody else, so he's got leverage.
Yeah.
And another thing is that there are so many options out of the bunch formation. We still have guys on go routes coming out of this.
Yeah.
You know, we're not necessarily going to run a screen out of this. When we call a play, if Peyton Manning likes it, that's what we're going to go with. We have crossing routes, we have deep routes, we have, you know, 10-yard hitch routes, we have out routes. And when you have Decker, Thomas, and Welker out there with Julius Thomas on the opposite side, who are you really going to pick? One of those guys is going to be a man coverage, and every single one of those guys in man coverage is a mismatch.
Well, that's one thing that I noticed about your guys' little bunch formation there, and it's particularly the bubble screen, is that you guys run that really well because you have some other things that pop off it. For example, with the Seahawks, they'll throw out that trips to the right or left or whatever, and you just know automatically it's a bubble screen, and people are teeing off on it like it's a total tendency. And so that's something that you guys do really well, is being able to run a few different looks out of that.
Well, and we also run the ball quite effectively out of this, too, because Julius Thomas has become a better blocker out of this formation. And so I noticed this last weekend. We had a run play called in this bunch, like kind of trips wide receiver to the left.
Yeah.
We had a run play called. Peyton Manning recognizes there's a blitz coming off the left-hand side. He audibles, quick screen, touchdown.
Yeah.
We were actually going to run the ball on that play. And so he has an ability to audible that regardless of what he sees. If there's no blitz, we'll run the ball. If they're putting an extra guy out to cover the wide receivers, we'll just run the ball in this formation. So it's almost like you have to pick your poison and figure out what you're going to let beat you, because Peyton Manning is going to figure out how to beat you. There's not a defense that is smarter than Peyton Manning at this point. You know, Dan Patrick said the biggest weapon in the NFL right now is Peyton Manning's mind. And I completely agree. He's just outsmarting everybody. He did it last year, and he's doing it again. He's pretty much done it his whole entire career, and he's only gotten better at it.
Well, you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. It's
getting tough. You know, it's getting tough for people. And Julius Thomas, with the emergence of him, you know, having him on the opposite side of this bunch formation is just toxic for defense, because that almost requires you to have a safety or a linebacker. And on Julius Thomas, both of those are man-to-man mismatches. You know, he's 6'5".
Yeah.
He's a monster, and he's got great hands. That's a giant mismatch. So this formation, with the amount of options that we have out of it, is basically one of the most unstoppable formations I've seen in football.
Yeah.
It's fairly ridiculous. But that's pretty much what I wanted to cover as far as the Philly game goes.
Yeah. You know, so up next, you got Dallas.
Yeah, up next, we got Dallas, which I watched some Dallas games.
What the fuck?
You know, they remind me a lot of what Houston is, though. They do.
Yeah.
A quarterback that's mainly not going to be all that clutch.
Yep.
They're going to make some dumb mistakes. Their defense is overrated. Everybody's claiming, oh, Dallas' defensive line. Hey, what are you going to do about that? We're going to beat that defensive line.
I think
line.
The Texans' defense is far better than the Cowboys' defense. But
I wouldn't say that, because, you know, Houston's one player. I guess Cowboys are kind of the same way.
Yeah, kind of, but their one player isn't even close to the caliber of Houston's one player.
No, I mean, both defenses are mediocre to me. They're very similar.
You'd be surprised if you look at the stats for the Texans' D.
I mean, again, stats. You know, again, stats. It's through week four. Like, stats are boring to me.
Well, I understand stats are boring to you.
But when you look at the Cowboys' offensive weapons, when they got Dez Bryant, Miles Austin, you know, that tight end, that's actually pretty good. I think their offense is a lot better than Houston's is. So these two teams are very similar to me when I watch them. And there's just nothing that they can really do to compete with us. When they were interviewing the Broncos locker room about this game, all the Broncos basically just said was, well, they're historically one of the better franchises in football, you know, so it's going to be a tough game. Yeah. They're one of those teams that's completely living off of their past.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Romo is not a bad quarterback by any means. No. I think he's a good quarterback. Yeah. I've always, you know, I didn't always think Tony Romo was a good quarterback, but at this point in his career, I've seen him make every single throw on the field. I've seen him be a weasel, get out of situations, make throws on the run.
He's tough.
I think he's quality. I think Dez Bryant is going to be a mismatch for everyone, especially in the red zone.
Sure.
And what I did not see the Chargers do, which they should have, and I saw who did the Falcons play this last week?
Oh, Miami. Or no, yeah. New England.
New England. Okay. What New England did in their dismantling of the Atlanta Falcons is on Tony Gonzalez, they would put two people up on him and just bump him. They wouldn't even let him run a route. I don't know why
they
people aren't doing
him.
That.
They fucking mugged him. He pulled out a knife and asked him for his wallet.
They were treating him like a gunner on a punt team.
Big time. I had never seen that before in my life.
Oh, really?
Not.
Have you not watched the Calvin Johnson game?
Not to that. No, where two guys get on you on the line.
People have been doing that to Calvin Johnson for a couple years.
I just haven't seen it to that extreme before.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they won't let Calvin Johnson 3 yards off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They won't let him go. And they were doing the same thing to Tony Gonzalez in the red zone. I cannot, for the life of me, figure out why the Chargers didn't do this to Dez Bryant. In the red zone, he is a freak. He's got a vertical that's just unmatched by any secondary.
Yeah.
So I hope to God that that's what we do when they get inside the red zone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Tony Romo, he's going to get you up and down the field. He will. Mm-hmm. He's a good quarterback.
Yeah.
He's really, you know, him and Jason Witten are red zone. They're red zone threats, but Dez Bryant, you just got to double him.
I think Jason Witten has slowed down tremendously this year.
Of course.
I don't think that he's even half the player that he was.
But in the red zone, man, it's a whole different ball game. That's a game of wits rather than just a game of physicality.
I don't see any possible way that you guys lose this game to Dallas.
I don't think there's a possibility. I'm just kind of I'm looking at matchups, basically.
Sure. Yeah, you know, just to see.
DeMarco Murray. Mm-hmm. I think he's good. You know, 2 weeks ago, he had over 150 yards. You know, Tony Romo is good at extending plays. You know, he's not going to pick up a first down on his feet like we saw Mike Vick do last week. But, you know, it's the Dez Bryant thing. That's the main thing that worries about me is you just can't leave him in single coverage.
No. It'll be fine. I mean, it's one of those games. You go down there. It's a Dallas team that's honestly just soft. They're just not mentally tough.
Yeah.
They just can't. They're
still a Cowboys team, you know?
It just looks like a Jason Garrett team, does it not?
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't this exactly what you see out of the Dallas Cowboys every year with Jason Garrett?
Yep. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about DeMarco Murray, too. But, again,
he's not that good.
We have the number three ranked rushing defense in the NFL. And this is, of course, because they put us behind Green Bay, which had a bye last week. So that doesn't really count. So technically, we would be number two. But, we've faced Ray Rice, Darren McFadden, LeSean McCoy, and Mike Vick, and we're still basically number two in the NFL.
I think that's a little bit of a product of just the fact that you guys are getting people down by so much, you know, early in there,
having
to abandon the running game and have to throw the ball a lot. So,
there's that. And, you know, one thing I've noticed in the first and second quarters when people are trying to establish the run is that there's nowhere to go. Yeah, you're not gonna run the ball against our defensive tackles. Our linebackers are so fast to the edges that we really bottle up the run really well. And so, I think it's two things basically. It is a product of our offense this last game of forcing the Eagles into a throwing offense. But if you look at the first three games where our offense actually started out slow, these offenses still couldn't run the ball against us.
Sure,
you know, we're still bottling it up. So I mean, in the second half, sure, that's the product, but they still couldn't get it established. So I don't think the Cowboys are going to be able to do that either. You know,
if we
start out fast and make them abandon the run altogether, we're going to force Tony Romo into some mistakes. You know, this Cowboys team, they kind of fall into the same category. You know, the Falcons, the Texans, the Cowboys, they're all this kind of team to me.
Yeah,
the same exact team where they're kind of mediocre. They're not really going to kill you. And, you know, I actually, like you said, Jason Witten before, man, I like Wesley Woodyard and Dookie Anacho being on Jason Witten. I think that cancels that out. But, you know, I don't have a lot more to say about that. I hope Champ Bailey gets some game time. I want to see him come back because Tony Carter, he's kind of been a penalty liability. Mm-hmm. He's good in coverage, but he puts his hands in a little too much where they shouldn't be.
Sure.
You know, but other than that, I like the way our football team is going.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're only going to get better, and I can't wait to actually play the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that game as well, but the next one up is the Dallas Cowboys, and all you can do
is... And on the road, too. So, it'll be good on the road.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be a good win.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. But, there you go.
That's
Dallas Cowboys are mediocre. And
can't wait to watch the most exciting fucking team in football.
Yeah, okay, then.
What are the Seahawks more exciting than the Broncos?
Tell me that game wasn't exciting on Sunday.
It was boring as fuck for 3.5 quarters.
Oh, okay then.
Nothing happened for 3.5 quarters.
Okay, all right.
You can't even deny that.
Oh, yeah, I can. I'd actually deny that.
Go ahead.
First half, there was the amazing interception by Earl Thomas that bounced off like four people. And as far as like, if you're just looking at it as a quality of a game, the Texans were moving the ball all over the place. That's exciting to watch.
Right. So Adam claims that the Seattle Seahawks are more entertaining to watch.
I'm saying they're equally as
than
exciting
the
to
Broncos.
Watch.
Who
you
are
watch
killing
Russell Wilson.
Teams
you watch Russell
offenses.
Wilson on that 99-yard drive and tell me that's not some entertaining fucking football to watch.
You watch Peyton Manning on every single drive he is on and tell me that's not entertaining. He does it every drive.
Then.
Russell Wilson does it once
then.
A game.
Oh, once a game. All right, we're ending
drive.
The donkey spin on that before I get pissed off.
190-yard drive.
Oh, okay.
That's all.
Oh,
he
yeah.
Had.
He doesn't do shit other than that. He's not exciting in any other way. Okay,
you guys,
you're fucking
you
wrong.
You guys have
you're
the
so
25th.
Full of shit on this.
You guys have the 25th
Jesus
passing
Christ.
Offense in the NFL. That's
oh,
it.
Well, big deal. We also threw the ball 75 less times in the last four games than you guys did. So congratulations for throwing the ball more
Adam,
so you have more passing stats.
Adam struggles with knowing that he's the second best team in the
it's
NFL.
It's not true
the
because I don't struggle with it because it's just not fucking true.
How do you think?
In all
you
the ways,
said that you guys
get, I'll tell you exactly
you guys
how
said
I
that
think.
You may lose this game to Indy on the road.
Right.
Which means you are
we're
not
banged
the top
up right
team
now.
In the NFL. Which means you're not the top
oh, okay.
team in the NFL.
So if you lose a game, you're no longer a top team in the NFL.
Look at your offensive line.
Yeah, right now this week.
Look at
we're
your
struggling.
Mental mistakes.
The mental mistakes have gotten far lesser
team.
Since the first game.
You can
sit there and
to.
Think that you guys are the best team in the world, but bring on the Super Bowl in the cold weather with an elite defense. We're going to beat your fucking ass down.
That's such a joke.
That's not a joke because it's happening. Mark it down. Mark it down. Let me bet anything.
Listen how pissed he is just because he knows.
Oh, okay. Because
this is a man in denial.
This is a man who's got his head so far up his
Broncos are
cloud
the best
that he
team
doesn't
in the
know
NFL.
Shit about anything else.
Okay, so right. Adam disagrees with Trent Dilfer and John Gruden.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sue me.
I all won't right. sue you, but I'll disagree with you big time.
That's fine. I don't have to agree with somebody to be right, Jared. All right. Well, that said, let's wrap up the documentary.
Because you're always
the
right.
NFL. I am in this case. All right.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow was right. All right, man. We're wrapping this up.
You just had a meltdown. That was awesome.
Yeah. Okay, then. All right. We're heading into the NFL segment. Stay tuned. I'm going to strangle Jared in the break. All righty. We're back, folks. Jared's still alive.
Adam's fresh off his meltdown.
I am like Fukushima. I've been cooled down, but I'm still toxic.
But you're still radiating madness.
So
Greasy Pro Bowl won the picks last week.
Sure did.
Shout out to him.
He's had a few strong weeks. I've yet to add up the picks yet for the first quarter. I will do that when I put up the power or the picks thing tonight. So
a little tally for the first quarter.
First quarter to see where we're at.
I'm
down 3 picks overall after 4 weeks to you after I beat you this week and put the cover photo up of Russell Wilson in the Lotus position, which I promised you was going to happen this week, and lo and behold, there it is. So
I think you guys could use a little less yoga and maybe a little more strength.
I think we have plenty
of strength workouts.
We're fine.
Uh-huh.
So let's get into our top fives. Jared, roll down your top five. We'll try to keep this concise and get right to our picks.
All right. Number one, Denver Broncos, because I think they are and will continue to be the most polished team in the NFL. Number two, the Seahawks. They are dealing with injuries, but they will still be very highly competitive towards the end of the season. Number three, the New Orleans Saints. You know what? They impressed me with their win against Miami. Mm-hmm. I think their offense, you know, I think the rust is being knocked off. I think they have a little bit left, but man, yeah. I think they're going to be something to be reckoned with come postseason.
They're scary.
Same thing with New England.
Yes.
You'd claim that they were still going to unravel. I thought they were already at rock bottom, and I think this is a New England team on the mend. I think Kembrell
Thompson.
That Atlanta
win was impressive.
I think Kembrell Thompson is going to be pretty legit. He was undrafted. Yeah. He's become Tom Brady's favorite target.
Yeah.
Danny Amendola, if he can get healthy sometime. Who knows if he will. Fuck that. And number five, Kansas City, just because I think Andy Reid really controls a mistake-free football team, and they're not really going to beat themselves, so I think they are quality. They may not be the best team, but I think they earned a spot in the top five to me.
Oh, I agree.
It was between them and in Indianapolis, actually.
Well, ours aren't that far off. You know, I wrote this down, and I put the Hawks at number one just because of our last conversation, out of spite. But the thing is, if you're looking at it on just this week, who's better? Just this week, the Broncos are better just this week because of our injuries.
I think through the first 4 weeks, we've been more polished.
Yeah, I think that I do put stock into quality opponent. We've played a far more quality opponent and blown a couple of them out, too.
I think having given a quality opponent, we beat them badly, too.
And we've had fewer home games as well. So I think those are two things that go in there.
Okay.
So it just depends on how you throw your power rankings together. I think, as far as overall, if you look at the team when it all comes together, I still believe the Hawks are number one. So they're number one for me. The Broncos are a fucking fantastic team, and they're running up and down the field and fucking killing people. They are number two. Number three team is also the New Orleans Saints for me.
All right.
Without
a doubt, I think they're number three at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost put them in that group of the two best teams. They're knocking on the door of being in the upper echelon. Number four to me, I put the Kansas City Chiefs.
Really?
Their defense is fucking good. It's scary good. Mm-hmm. And Alex Smith is the exact quarterback that Andy Reid has always dreamed of.
Mr. Efficiency.
Mr. Efficiency doesn't make mistakes. That team is going to fundamental people to death.
I think they are that fundamental team. You know, if there's any basketball fans out there, they're kind of like the Spurs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They're
like
not going to make mistakes.
Yeah, and I think the only reason I put them above my number five team, the Patriots, is I think that their cohesion, their polishness beats a Patriots team that's still coming together a bit. Now, the Patriots win over Atlanta was impressive.
It was. Like I said, I think this is a Patriots team on the mend, and I think their defense is a little underrated.
I think Atlanta's unraveled even further than I had expected them to.
Especially after that loss, man. I mean, how do you come back after just being completely deflated by Tom Brady and Bill Belichick?
That was fucking pathetic, Falcons. Oh, man. That was pathetic.
Oh, geez.
So
talk about a team that's just done.
That's our top five. There will be a section to enter your top five, and I wish I would have printed it out before. I would have brought up a couple of your folks' top fives from last week because people have been sending those in. That's very cool. There's also a comment section so you can give us your thoughts on the NFL as well, and we'll probably start to read those off here. Josh Gay's looking at you. You always come up with some really great comments and stuff.
Yep.
So like I told you, buddy, I'll have that up tonight, and I'll email you the link since you can't do Facebook. So we'll get that to you. All right, so on to the picks, Jared.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm current champion.
Okay. fuck. I'm overall champion, so eat shit.
No, I'm current champion.
Overall.
Camp current.
I am better over the course of time. Okay, first game.
Short time.
Buffalo in Cleveland.
Buffalo in Cleveland. This is a very interesting game. This is a Thursday night game. You know, Cleveland's on a roll after the Trent Richardson trade. So apparently the key to success is to trade all your good players and start your third string quarterback, and you'll go on a roll. But here's the thing. The Buffalo Bills are solid, and they've played teams pretty well.
Yeah, and they're just coming off of a Baltimore win, too.
That's true. They spanked down that pathetic Baltimore team. That was pretty fucking fun. I go with the Buffalo Bills here.
That's actually what I went with, too, because I think Cleveland's run's going to come to an end. You know, they did just beat Cincinnati. I don't know about Cincinnati, man. I can't fucking figure them
out. Jekyll and Hyde team.
We'll get to them. Okay, New Orleans and Chicago.
This is easy to me. This is New Orleans Saints.
I picked the same thing. I don't think Cutler and that offense can keep up with them.
Nope. Cutler's going to make two more mistakes than Drew Brees in that game. That's the difference of the game.
I think New Orleans pass rush has also come on pretty strong. They were in Tannehill's face the entire game.
It's been pretty impressive.
All right, New England in Cincinnati.
Fucking Cincinnati, man. This is a team that I just don't know what to make of them. Who was that Andy Dalton that was on the field against the Browns? Who was that guy?
You know, he's becoming so inconsistent to me that I wouldn't trust him if I was a Cincinnati Bengals fan.
You know, I think I got to go with Tom Patriot and the Bradys.
That's what I went with.
Yeah.
New England all the way.
Okay.
All right. Detroit in Green Bay.
This is an interesting
game. Was a tough one.
See, this is, if there's ever a must win.
Keep in mind, Green Bay is coming off a bye.
Right. So they've had a little extra time to prepare.
2 weeks.
Reggie Bush is going to play, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That Detroit offense is just different with Reggie Bush in there.
Yeah,
he's a legitimate threat. He's a game breaker. This is a must-win game for the Green Bay Packers. If they lose this game, they're going to be, what, 2.5 games back? Games back? Something like that?
They'd be 1-3 at this point if they lost this game.
I would like to think that they're going to come out with all the fight in the world, but this team is unraveling. They're just unraveling, it seems. You got Aaron Rodgers yelling at Mike McCarthy on the sidelines. I just don't see the chemistry on that team. They just don't play with a lot of energy or heart. I think the Detroit Lions are sneaky good. I'm going Detroit.
All right. I went Green Bay here because I'm putting a little bit of faith in Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not notice that unraveling that you just talked about and those two screaming at each other.
Yeah.
And so to me, this is a make it or break it game. You know, after all that turmoil that happened on the sideline, if they can come back from that and beat this Detroit team at home, you know, a divisional opponent, then I think their confidence will be back up. And I think they'll start to get a little bit better as the season goes on. Mm-hmm. But if they lose this game, I think it's going to just completely unravel for
them. Well, there's always that team that's supposed to be good that surprises everybody who ends up being real bad. And I'm starting to wonder
this year?
I'm starting to wonder. I can't say that as a complete proclamation, but you know, I look at this and I don't feel great about Detroit in this game.
I don't feel good about my pick at all.
It's just this is totally from the gut.
I'm trying to just put some faith in Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. That's the only reason I picked them, but I pondered this for a while.
Yeah.
No divisional pun intended.
Yeah.
Kansas City in Tennessee.
Well, no Jake Locker, which is a gigantic bummer. He actually was playing really well.
He was.
Especially in that last game. I think this is a no-brainer at this point because it's Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's Kansas City.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's exactly who I went with. Andy Reid's not losing this game.
No.
And, you know, this is actually a pretty good test against it. You know, Tennessee's become pretty solid.
Yes.
You know, they are losing the quarterback for this game, and it is Ryan Fitzpatrick. But I think on the road, they don't have to travel too far to Tennessee, I guess. But it'll be a decent test, you know.
Yeah, it's
but
a decent test.
But Kansas City still wins. I think this game actually just makes them a better team.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
yeah.
All right, next, Seattle, Indianapolis.
Okay, so
you were having questions about this before.
Well, no, my initial prediction is that Indy wins this game, but this is the pick segment, so I don't have to make a prediction. This is a pick. So I'm going to guess that Max Unger plays.
Okay.
And with Max Unger playing, this is a win for the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay. I'm going just based on matchup standpoint with your offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I've seen from Indy this year is that they're more disciplined than I thought. You know, they're not a highly penalized team. They're not a team that's going to create, you know, they're not going to give up the ball a lot. So they're not going to beat themselves. And so just given the matchup, that's why I'm picking them. You know, again, like I said in the Seahawks segment.
State of the teams when they happen to meet up.
You know, I definitely, by no means, Seahawks fans, I don't think that Indianapolis is better than the Seahawks. I just think with your guys' injuries, you know, that you will come back from later on in the season. It's just a bad matchup at this point. And it's a long way to travel.
Yeah, it is.
So,
and it's 10 a.m. start. I feel you.
Yeah. All right. So, Jacksonville in St. Louis.
Just,
is this the toilet bowl of this week?
This is absolutely the toilet bowl of this week. You know, it's in St. Louis, though, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Are they doing Blaine Gabbert or are they going with Chad Henne?
The fuck? I don't know. I don't even care.
I've heard... I actually would pick Jacksonville if it weren't for Blaine Gabbert.
Dude, Jacksonville ain't going to win a game this year.
Yes, they're going to win at least
to
one.
To who? They don't play the Raiders again.
I know, but that St. Louis team is so bad.
They're not that bad.
They're not that bad, St. Louis.
Oh, God. I just...
I wanted to pick them there, but...
quick pause.
Sure.
Who could Jacksonville beat this year?
Somebody who's got a seed locked up in the playoffs in week 17 that's playing all of their backups.
Okay, good point. Okay, touche. Touche. All right.
That's about it.
We'll look into their schedule and we'll make a Jacksonville prediction.
Yeah.
So much exciting
podcast. With the first pick in the NFL draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select.
They whiff on another pick. Baltimore and Miami.
Miami. Baltimore's not good.
God damn it.
Joe Flacco threw 5 fucking picks against the Bills.
Oh, my God.
That's a
against the Bills.
That's a fucking train wreck.
Flacco, what are you doing? You know, just stop throwing it to the defense.
It's regular season Joe Flacco. What else do you want? Like, that's who he is in the regular season.
He keeps fucking around. He won't get into the playoffs. Of course, the rest of his division is fucking. They might be closing in on one of the worst divisions in football.
Oh, it's either between the AFC North or the NFC East.
NFC East, yeah.
It's one of those two divisions. And here's the thing. If the Browns continue this little crazy run that they're on, they could seriously
win that division.
They could seriously overtake the Ravens.
Wow.
And Cincinnati's going to beat them out.
Maybe. Who knows? These teams suck. Teams don't even know what they're doing.
There's
on a football
wins
field.
In the bank then already, you know?
Like, that's true.
That's all I'm going to
You know, I mean, if 3 wins is going to win you that division, so be it.
Yeah.
Okay. Philadelphia against the Giants.
Oh, good God.
I know. What the fuck, Giants? You know, Eli Manning is a quality quarterback. Tom Coughlin is a quality coach. How did it unravel this badly over the last 2 seasons?
You know, we talked about offensive line with the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at the Giants. It's the same thing. Only that's their starters.
Oh, God.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just how bad that state of that offensive line is. And I don't care how many great skill position players you have, Victor Cruz, Hakeem Nicks, all that stuff.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter when your offensive line is just getting your guy fucking pummeled. Like, if you can't look at your fucking receivers and make your reads, you're done.
I feel bad for Eli Manning. I think that Victor Cruz contract was a complete fucking whiff. I know he's good.
I don't think so.
But I think they should have put that money somewhere else.
I think they just need to draft better on the offensive line is really what their big problem is.
Yeah, maybe over the last couple of years, maybe are you kind of trying to say maybe they just kind of worked themselves into a hole with the way they've structured their franchise?
That's exactly what
that's
I'm
a
thinking.
Good point.
Yeah, I don't know that contract's a killer.
Yeah. Okay.
Know?
Good
so,
point.
Yeah.
So, Philly? In the
Meadowlands? The Giants at home, right?
Yeah, I really actually questioned this one for a little while. You know, Philly's going to be depleted after a huge loss
on the road. Their defense is so bad. Oh, my God, Philly's defense is bad.
It hasn't been the worst in the NFL,
it's
that's
close.
For sure. It's actually not close. You know, there are a lot of defenses worse than them, especially statistically.
I don't know. I'd like
I just
look
think
that
Philly's. I think Philly's better than the Giants. So I went with them.
I think so, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Carolina and Arizona.
Carolina's going to kill them.
Yep.
Carson Palmer is going to be carried out in a body bag against that front seven of the
Carolina
Panthers.
Well, and that game is going to be completely on his shoulders because Carolina hasn't allowed shit in the run. Mm-hmm. They are number one in the NFL, and this is where statistics do not lie. They are fucking stout against the run, man.
They're top 5 front seven in this league.
I'd say they almost have the best front seven in this league.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
you
tough to
it.
Put anybody above them.
You could argue
they're
it.
Pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
All right. Denver and Dallas.
Yeah, we know the Tony Romo's not going to win that game.
No. San Diego and Oakland. Keep in mind this.
San Diego's decent.
This just in. Freeney's out for the season, and so is Malcolm Floyd.
Yeah, 2 guys that don't matter.
Yeah, but when Phillip Rivers, he's shown that when he loses one receiver, he completely shuts down.
Yeah, that's with North Turner at the helm. I think that San Diego is far better than Oakland at this point.
Just wanted to bring him up.
I appreciate the heads up.
Houston in San Francisco.
I really want Houston to win this game. I really, really want Houston to win this game. But on the road after deflating loss, I'm going with San Francisco.
Okay. You know, I think Houston's going to be hungry after a loss at home.
I would think
so. I think Schaub, you know, is bad. I think he hasn't been as bad as I think his fans are making him out
to be.
Not at all. But I think he's going to come into a game where he's got something to prove, and I just think this is one of those great random Schaub games. And, you know, Alden Smith is, of course, out, so that there lacks the pass rush there.
Yep.
Justin Smith, he's another year older.
Yeah, he's JJ Watt minus.
In San Francisco, I know everybody was trying to fucking act like they had just won the goddamn Super Bowl last week.
After the Rams game?
Yeah.
Where they're chanting Seahawks suck at the post game? Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So I have not seen San Francisco. They haven't impressed me in one single game this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with Houston.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
I did think about it, though.
Yeah. Don't highlight that. That's not my pick. There you go. San Francisco.
Okay. Now, we got the Jets in Atlanta.
God, another toilet bowl. What the fuck, Atlanta?
I
love that they're terrible.
I know.
Steven Jackson's not coming back, blah, 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 all that. But Geno Smith is still Geno Smith.
I picked this game based on Tony Gonzalez and Julio Jones.
That's actually fair. I'm going with Atlanta.
That's who I went with. Yeah. Just because it's good. I don't know if I'm going to even watch that Monday night. Well, I'll fucking watch it. Who am I kidding?
Yeah, you're going to watch it.
But God,
Matt Ryan is Matt Schaub, is he not? Like, aren't they the same quarterback?
They're the same guy. Those two teams are identical to me.
Yeah.
They're the same team. And, you know, the Jets' defense has played fairly well, but Geno Smith is just, he hasn't had enough time in this game. You know, no. Aaron Rodgers had talked about sitting for 3 years behind Brett Favre was the best thing that had happened to his career.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these guys are thrown into the fire way too early, mm-hmm. and as a result, they're going to be thrown out of the NFL early.
Well, here's the thing. I think Geno Smith has made more than a quality showing for himself to this point in the season.
For the situation he's in, I couldn't agree more. With Rex Ryan and that bullshit of a fucking franchise, I think he's done everything he could.
I do, too. I actually have a lot of respect for Geno Smith. He's been better than I would have thought he would have been.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
And I think he actually has a fairly bright future once they get rid of Rex Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, but apparently Jets fans love him, Rex Ryan. Apparently, do they still?
I guess. I'm not sure.
Wake up,
dude.
All right. How many picks do we differ on? Let me count. One, two, three.
That's fine.
That's it.
We've only been winning and losing by 1 to 2 picks every week. Yep. So, yeah.
And so now that means I'll actually win this week by 3. So,
okay, then.
So what else happened? Any other storylines in the NFL happened this last week or last 4 weeks you want to talk about?
I think Miami getting handled by New Orleans is
that was
one.
A surprise to me.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to have a better showing.
I did, too, because I think Miami's a calamity. I think they're a really good team. And to watch New Orleans just kind of systematically take them apart.
Yeah.
That was affirming of how I felt about New Orleans coming into this season, but probably exceeded my expectations.
See, when I look at that game, I look at an entire team that just got rattled. That offensive line, you know, they couldn't block a fucking turtle.
True.
At that point.
True.
And I think it was just a young team that lacks a little bit of chemistry right now,
mm-hmm.
that just got rattled by a team who had finally, I think New Orleans actually, when they're trying to knock 100% of the rust off, I think before this week in practice and during that game, they'd knocked like 60% of it off in that game and just unleashed, and Miami didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so I think Miami's better than the score in the game showed,
mm-hmm.
but still New Orleans clearly the better team.
Yeah. And New Orleans' offensive line is playing a lot better than I thought they would coming into the season. Drew Brees has been staying pretty clean.
Oh,
and
man, yeah.
You give Drew Brees a little bit of time. Good night.
Yo, it's over, dude. There's no other quarterback. There are accurate quarterbacks in the NFL, but he is very accurate. He's not going to miss those throws.
Yeah.
What do you make of the Josh Freeman situation?
Josh Freeman needs to be traded to the Minnesota Vikings, and if you haven't made that happen yet, you're a fucking failure as a GM for the Minnesota Vikings. I understand the cap room and blah, blah, blah. It's already
make
been
it
said.
Happen.
Freeman's willing to restructure, so I don't really understand like what the risk is. You give up a sixth or a seventh rounder to bring in a potential franchise guy that was screwed over by a terrible college coach?
Yeah. You know, I was actually going to bring up the Vikings also, just given the turmoil of their quarterback situation.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a player in recent years that wanted out of a situation so bad as Josh Freeman does right now?
Jay Cutler in Denver?
I don't think it wasn't this bad.
It wasn't this bad?
No, this is bad mid-season.
Maybe Jeff George back in the day? Like, he wanted out of Atlanta real bad.
That's true. But, I mean, this is mid-season. Like, he gets benched, and he is clearly better than the option that they're going with.
Mm-hmm.
Shiano, everybody knows that he is the problem.
Yes.
And so when
For Tampa Bay management.
When you get benched by a coach that everyone knows is the problem, how frustrated would you be as Josh Freeman?
You know, I'd be extremely frustrated. And some people have kind of panned him for the way that he's handled it to this point. And I don't see it. I think for a young guy with an ego that's probably the size of Texas being a starting quarterback in the NFL, mm-hmm. I think he's actually handled it pretty fucking well. He needs to go somewhere to have another shot, because I'm not done on Josh Freeman.
I'm not either. You know, I've seen him play really good in some games, and I think as a quarterback and as a player like he's been and all the crap that he's been through in Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. I think anybody as cool, calm, and collected as you try to be while trying to manage your Texas-sized ego,
yeah,
these guys can only take so much.
I think it's going to be real easy for him to see how it's done, to do it the correct way, and that's just to watch Alex Smith from last year.
Yeah.
And I just take a page out of that playbook, request a trade, hope that they do it. If you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, why don't you pull the trigger on that?
Fuck, I don't know. If you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, why don't you even sign Tebow? Why don't you do all sorts of things?
I don't know. I think they're legitimately in tank mode.
And they're trying to get out of Jacksonville, too, I think.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be in L.A.
Big time.
They're going to be in L.A.
Yep.
I don't know exactly the time frame of that, but that's
I don't either, but I think that's the goal.
Yeah. I would agree.
You know, is there anything else in the NFL that would stand out to you?
No, that was pretty much it. That was pretty much it for me.
All right.
All right.
That's pretty much all I got, too.
All right, man. Well, let's wrap this thing up. Whether it's in John Elway or John Schneider,
in John's we trust.